one of the major issues I see on projects, especially with remote work, is just you're not able to effectively say what you need and what you want. So pick up the phone, go to the office, stop in the trailer, talk to the people that you work with, and they'll see your face and you'll be a little bit more successful, I think.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm excited to be joined by Delia Righi, Associate Vice President and Program Manager at HNTB. Today's episode, we're changing things up a bit. Delia is a mid-career professional on the fast track. She was just recently promoted to Associate Vice President at HNTB, and I'm really looking forward to exploring what has made her so successful and what the leaders in her industry need to do to create more Delias. So let's dive in. Hey, Delia, how are you?
Hi, Eric. I'm great. Thank you.
I know we talked about, you just mentioned this to me, but you've seen a few of the other episodes. We always start with good news and gratitude. And so is there any like personal or professional good news or gratitude you'd like to share with me or the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in a fun season of life right now. There's a lot of discussions, events getting planned, opportunities like this podcast that are happening right now. Sometimes it feels like you're going through the planting season, the growing season, then harvesting. But right now I seem to be getting the benefits of all of the seasons. It's enjoyable. So I'm very grateful to be at this time in my journey.
Very cool. Yeah. So I always like to share gratitude as well. We're very big on trying to start all of our meetings with good news and gratitude. So one, my gratitude on show days, always to the guest. I can't imagine how busy you guys are and to make time to do this. I just appreciate that. Just always a gratitude, general gratitude for my team. They're so great at helping us put this type of stuff together and all and a bunch of other initiatives we do throughout the company. So thanks to them. All right, well, let's go into your background. Tell us about yourself. Like, where did you grow up? Where'd you go to school? What did you study? What were your hobbies? Just give your bio in like 2 minutes. What would you say?
Sure. So I was born and raised in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Grew up with my mom, dad, my two brothers. My dad was the CEO and president of an electrical contracting company that my grandfather started back in 1949. And now my older brother leads the company and my younger brother is his vice president. So I was able to see the dedication that my dad had, the hours that he worked, the sacrifices that he made to run a successful family business. Now it's also very exciting to see my brothers step into that leadership role, bring their vision to the role and see what challenges they experience and how they overcome it. It's definitely challenging to be a third generation in a family business. And so I'm very proud of my brothers. Growing up, family business, it's taught me so much. It's how I got my initial interest in construction, sparked my future. Bring your daughter to work day was boots on and in the truck driving to job sites. So that was a little different and creative and exciting. So when it came time for college, deciding on a school and a major, my grandfather actually, he knew I was strong in math and encouraged me to pursue engineering. My parents were very supportive of this path. I was fortunate to get accepted to Lehigh University and graduated with a BS in civil engineering. So after graduation, got a job with Kiewit, which is a heavy civil general contractor. I lived and worked around the Northeast and moved 3 times within 4 years. And it was 6 days a week, 60, 70 hour work weeks. It was relentless, but it was very exciting. I was young, so I was able to do it. After 4 years, I left Kiewit and I moved out to California, like to call it my quarter life crisis. I worked for a family maritime construction business out in Long Beach, California. It's not a very good fit for me. So I ended up moving back to the East Coast about a year later. I had a friend, had some connections that got me an interview with HNTB. I got hired as a cost estimator. And from there, I had a variety of roles, including estimating, project controls manager, project manager, deputy program manager. And then right now I'm working on a program at LaGuardia Airport for one of the large agencies. I'm overseeing the completion of the terminals program.
Very exciting. So I said this to you before we started filming. I learned so much on these episodes about the guests. And so I just learned all about your family business. I don't think that's ever come up. And that is very interesting and probably a topic we will cover in great detail. I have a lot of experience in generational and family type business. So that's really exciting. That's very cool. And you never thought to go to that side with your two brothers?
I like to see the way that they're spreading their wings. I like to see the way they encounter problems and attack. And I'm always a phone call away. My brother and I consult a lot about different marketing opportunities and ways that they could advance Everon and grow the company and make it a more prominent company within Scranton, the Northeast Pennsylvania.
That is really cool. And then also with your history with Kiewit, I mean, great firm. We've done a decent amount of work with them. But that is your experience is, I've heard that from people, like some amazing projects all over the country, but you bleed yellow when you're Kiewit.
Yeah, the black and yellow for sure. They were a wonderful way to start out. Truly enjoyed my time there.
That's awesome. All right. Well, so you dove into this a little bit, but I just, if we could get a little more detail. So you grew up with the construction background, right? Clearly with your dad and the second generation and now third generation running electrical. So you went to school for engineering. Kind of sounds like your grandfather encouraged that, which is nice. And how did you find veering, like once you started veering away from, let's call it traditional construction or engineering to construction management? What was that path like? Like, what made you decide, yeah, HNTB is the right fit. This is the right role as a cost estimator. And then obviously that's progressed since then.
Yeah, I would say when I moved back from California to the East Coast, I was really looking for what the right fit was. I interviewed at multiple different firms, a general contractor, a couple different consulting agencies. And the thing that I was saying in my interview is, don't give me an offer unless you think that I am the right person for your role. Because I did not want to cloud any of my, I didn't want to have too many options to decide from. That's a very cocky way to say it. But I wanted to find the right fit for me and know that was the right fit for the other company as well. So I remember going through multiple rounds of interviews with the general contractor in Philly. And it was a great firm and I really liked it. But I just was so uncertain on it. There was something pulling me back from that. And my interviews with HNTB, I met with John Kovac and just immediately had great dialogue, felt very comfortable. We were able to talk the little shop. He was former Kiewit as well. And so he introduced me to a few of the ex-general contractors that worked for HNTB. And we were a smaller firm at the time. We're growing exponentially right now. But it felt very homey. It felt like the right fit. It felt like a place that they were going to be interested in my growth. And I, 7.5, 8 years later, I was at the absolute best decision that I made at the time.
That's awesome. And it goes to show just how important the interview process is as a two-way street. And I try to explain that to like candidates, even when we're in interviews, like, this isn't just about whether we think you're a good fit for us. Are you going to be happy coming here? You know, like that kind of thing. And it sounds like you did that in your journey and it worked out for you. It paid dividends. That is very cool. And it's, I mean, HNTB is a great firm by all accounts. All the people I know there are just good people. It's really exciting. All right, cool. So that was like the career part of it, right? Now, I know you're involved in like Building Congress, as am I. I know you're also involved in like PwC. Can you talk a little bit about how those types of organizations have also maybe shaped your career path? And for some of the earlier career professionals, like, why is it important to be involved in those types of organizations? Or do you think it's important? I shouldn't just impose that on it, but...
Absolutely. I think it's important. I think getting involved with New York Building Congress was like getting on a rocket ship for my career. I remember attending an event early on. Jay Sankar brought me to a luncheon or something and just feeling the turnout of people, the energy, the vibes in the room were absolutely immaculate. And I immediately wanted to get more involved in Building Congress. So I joined the Young Professionals Committee and then tried my best to get right onto the steering committee. After some time there, I was selected to be co-chair for the Young Professionals Committee, along with Maurice Roberts. And Building Congress was special because of the way they emphasized their commitment to the Young Professionals Committee. While we were working on programming for the year, we knew that we could give more to our members because of the commitments that we had and the backing from Carlo, the chair, Liz Velez. I mean, Ralph Esposito was such a strong champion for the Young Professionals Committee that his leadership allowed us to do so much more and give so much more visibility to the young professionals. And it was at a time in 2021, 2022, where people kind of weren't involved. It was easy to create an excuse to not go to an event. And we were doing our best to make it exciting so that people were interested in showing up and coming out and seeing what we had to offer. The board events, the foundation board, we had multiple events where board members would come to our speed networking event or just give their time, give their energy, give their resources, drive their young professionals to us so that we could engage them and bring them more into the feeling, the community of the industry. I was also New York Building Congress. I had the opportunity to speak at one of the luncheon events at the Hilton. So it was a room of 500 plus people. I was able to write out my speech. I practiced. I worked with the communications professionals. I got up on stage. It was terrifying, but I truly felt alive once I was up there and settled in. And I'm so grateful for Building Congress for that opportunity. I feel that getting involved in a professional development organization, it should be a requirement for everybody in our industry. Pick your style. There's tons and tons of options. If you want more technical, if you want more business type, whatever you are interested in, put your time, put your effort into these organizations. The more you put in, the more you'll get out of it.
There are definitely lots of them.
Yeah.
Definitely
yeah.
One that fits every person. And I love that advice. And I think the way you summarize it, and maybe we're going to take a clip of that and we'll send it to Carlo because he'll use it in the marketing for Building Congress. But joining Building Congress was like a rocket ship for my career. I think that's like exactly what you said. And that's such a great quote for it. And I agree. I'm very involved like you are. I'm actually reading this book right now called Never Eat Alone. And it's all about how it's not just what you know, your talents, your capabilities, but also about the network you create and the people that you associate yourself with. And obviously there's lots of quotes and things to that nature about your network, right? But Building Congress was a great way for me to meet a lot of people. It sounds like the same for you. And I guess we'd both encourage everyone to go out and sign up for some organization, right? Network in some way. It's going to help you in your career and your professional skills. Do you want to touch on a little bit, just like for some of the next generation, just like being a woman in the industry and how that may be like, you know, the PwC or WBC or any of those other organizations, if you're involved or not, but.
Yeah. And I think that's also what I mean by pick what interests you too. You're allowed to do Building Congress and professional women in construction. You're allowed to be involved in both. I think the topics that are discussed are similar, but different. There might be a little bit more emphasis on how a woman would approach a problem, or getting support and building your network with women isn't extremely important. I think PwC offers a closer knit, a tighter knit community that you can engage with. You can have raw conversations with people within that organization and you're not going to feel judgment. You're not going to feel silly or misunderstood. You're going to find your network there. You're going to find your tribe of people that have been through something similar to you. We're doing our best to balance out the numbers, the percentages between men and women. And I think organizations like PwC or WTS are doing the Lord's work to try to bring people in and keep people engaged. There's so much opportunity within this industry that we don't want to lose people to other forms of engineering or other avenues within other industries. We want to keep people within here and keep their interests peaked, whether you're in marketing, whether you're in communications or engineering or construction management, you or architecture, you have a role, you have a piece within the larger puzzle. And so finding your group will allow you to have that network, that community within work, within your company, but also outside of your company.
I love that. Find your tribe. I think it's a great way to summarize like what the goal of those networking groups are and help you be yourself, right? I mean, it's a place you can be comfortable with the people that you're comfortable with to express yourself in a way that makes you who you are. All right, very nice. So we've covered the technical aspect of how you got there. We've covered the professional volunteer, or however you want to consider the industry associations. So out of all of that, what's the biggest lesson you learned early on that helped you become like a leader, like to your career stage right now?
Sure. So I played a lot of sports growing up and I took athletics very seriously. I still am a very competitive person. So one time I was playing age group softball. I was probably U12, U14, something like that. And I was not getting as much playing time as I wanted to or expected. So my dad was bringing me home, you know, after playing a half an inning, right? And on the way home, he said to me, if you want to play, you need to learn to hit. If you can hit, they'll find a spot for you in the field. So I learned to hit and I got more playing time. And I still very much remember being in that car ride with my dad and learning that lesson that I needed to work hard. I needed to create a skill that's valuable. I needed to be flexible in what position I play on the team. And then leadership will find a way to utilize my talents. And it's extremely true right now, today, especially being in this mid-career. I have my tool belt. I bring these certain talents to a group. There might be a project that I'm the right fit for. There might be a project that I might be the right fit for, a reach or a stretch, something like that. But creating your arsenal of your skills and your objectives and your tools is the best way. And being flexible is the best way for management leadership to put you into a position that maybe you didn't see for yourself, but they see a future or a direction or there's a need. And filling that need, being able to say yes to whatever the company needs you to do is truly important.
Very cool. So two questions. Did you learn to hit?
I did. Yeah, I was a decent hitter after that.
And what position did they put you in?
I played all over the infield. I really loved third base, which I played by the time I was a senior in high school. That was my main position, but I played every infield position, first, second, short, pitcher. I don't think I ever caught, but yeah, third base was my favorite.
That is very cool. Great life lesson, right? And it sounds like something you took from when you were a kid, but, you know, I mean, how old were you, do you think, when you got that advice from your dad?
I would say probably 14.
Yeah. So you liked teenagers, so it really stuck with you and it seems to work well. I like that. Be flexible, say yes, fill in the gaps where you can. Very cool.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
I'm going to jump into more technical question here, right? And related to your more recent, like you went through your history, but obviously right now you handle mostly like project management, program management, right? At a high level. What are the greatest risks you've seen when program management isn't done correctly, especially on like a really large public project or public works?
The greatest risks are going to be, the tangible risks are going to be cost and schedule. The industry is going to provide you feedback on your design and your contract documents in the form of their proposal, right? They're going to, if you put out something that goes to bid and the industry comes back and says, well, it's actually this, that is a tough way to learn about your mistakes because it's usually public. So those are some of the major risks that we try to avoid. I think that it could cause the project to be canceled, to be shelved for a later date, repackaged, de-scoped. There's so many avenues for fixing the problem, but also just trying to not go down that direction in the first place. And obviously when you come into, there's certain scenarios that you can't control, whether there's a natural disaster or something like COVID, right? Where no one saw that coming.
Yeah.
And that drove pricing in the markets. So there's unforeseen circumstances for sure, but those are a lot of the major risks. I think stakeholder engagement and public engagement are another or two other major risks to a program if you don't have a strong program management team. We've seen priority projects for one politician when a new politician comes in that it's not their priority or it's not their idea, or they want to slightly tweak or change or make something fit within their platform. And so that is understood. Hopefully there is a level of engagement with the stakeholders throughout the program early enough too, that there could be buy-in and there could be a strong reason for the benefits of the program. So those can get across, but some of those things are really out of your control. But public engagement is one of those that your program management team could address. Early communication, getting buy-in, having the community be part of the solution. Those are the key ways to maintaining strong public engagement, making sure the community is okay with what we're building, with what our ideas are. And there's been great feedback from communities that have been incorporated into programs. And it's kind of creating that win-win situation. So good program management can ultimately help create that win-win, which is what agencies like to see as well.
Definitely always strive for win-wins, right? That's a great goal. Stephen Covey's 7 habits.
Yeah.
Win-wins. All right, very cool. So early on in that answer, you were talking about how cost and schedule are so important. So let's flip that around. Those are the greatest risks. Do you have an example of a time like they've actually saved the project from disaster, like how schedule or cost analysis can protect the project?
Sure. I mean, early detection is key. I have been on a program management contract where we were able to keep working. We were able to keep our conversations moving forward due to some our management of the budget and maybe a few small design changes that reduced the overall total project cost. I can't say that I was ever on a project that we saved it from disaster because we didn't map out what that disaster was, but I was never in an environment that it was that dramatic. But working in the, when I was working for Kiewit, working down at Midtown Tunnel Project in Virginia, we were on a tight schedule. There was a weather window. We were doing our push to prepare the approach section on the Norfolk side to receive the last tunnel piece. And so we had a day or days weather window, not weeks for this. So we're working to seal off the Norfolk side. We had our steel plates on, welded. Our welding was strong, but it still wasn't watertight for some reason. After days of trying to understand what the problem was, there was lifting underneath the tunnel sections underneath the approach section due to the negative pressure. And so I don't know exactly why this happened. So don't quote me on that, but we were able to identify a solution working with our design team. Everybody was out. This was an all hands on deck type of situation. We got a contractor to come up to Virginia. We ordered as much jet grout in this specific format or specific style that there was available in all of Virginia, and drilled probably 70 to 100 ports and just started jet grouting. It was a 24-hour a day operation for probably 5 days. They sent me home. They said, come back at 6. You're coming on night shift. And just we pushed through. So if we missed that weather window, there would have been significant delays to the setting the tunnel section. We would have had a negative impact on the overall program schedule, but also negative implications for leaving the tunnel sections that were out in the Elizabeth River for longer than they really needed to be or should have been. So that was just when the time is right, you need to throw resources and people at problem solving to maintain your schedule.
You got my adrenaline going. I think that's one of the coolest things about our industry. And I can't say I've ever been on a project that intense, but I've done some heavy civil, deep pile driving, and it's crazy things that come up, right? You hit a utility tunnel that existed 50 years ago. It's not drawn on any map anywhere. How are we going to solve this, right? Water's coming in from somewhere. Water is our greatest enemy. We have no idea why water is appearing here.
Yeah. Geotechnical engineers, I can't even imagine the things that they run into.
Just crazy stories. But it gets you amped up, right? And you think quick on your feet and you solve problems. And it's those days are really scary. But when you look back on it, also really exciting. Wow, we did that. So do you have any moment, what's the proudest moment you think of your career where we're talking about that was probably really scary when it happened, but today it's wow, that was amazing that we solved that. Either I solved it or we solved it together. A lot of what we do is so collaborative, right? Rarely is it one person, but
I don't have one moment that is the proudest for me, really. I think that as far as being on a team solving problems, I can't take credit for anything that we did as a team. So there's nothing that sticks out. I love the collaboration that we've done through the programs that I was on, through the work that I did with Kiewit out in California, and then so far with HNTB. I love supporting and serving for the agency that I've been supporting for the past 7 years or so. I would say a highlight for me is definitely being named AVP. That was very high up on my list. That was a goal of mine for past 5 years now. I worked with different mentors and my manager to try to lay out a plan to get there. And so executed that plan, and I didn't expect it last year, but that was even sweeter. And yeah, HNTB, there's tremendous opportunity working for HNTB. Just excited to have been given that recognition.
Very cool. And you know what? I want to talk about mentorship a little bit, because I think it's something that early career professionals maybe don't take as much advantage of or just don't even know how to utilize it. So tell me a little bit about, you said you had some mentors. Did they help you map a career plan? Did they just help you with like, hey, these are the skills you should get? Were they just like you bounced ideas off them? Was it a formal program? Like, tell us a little bit about it.
I think most of my mentoring was like an informal mentor situation where there was no like matching to a mentor and having to work with that one person. But I kind of had people in my life that have been guiding me my whole life, really, between my grandfather and my dad and my mom when I was younger. I had a life coach when I was younger that helped me work through where I wanted to go to college and what I wanted to do. So just really pivotal for getting into college and framing what the opportunities were with a degree in civil engineering. I think that's kind of a similar situation that I've had while working at HNTB as well, where I don't know what I don't know. I don't know the upward possibilities, and I don't want to set myself on a certain track that and limit anything else. So I want to say, this is what I'm interested in doing and see how that to a few people and see how that is able to come back to me in different ways. And so I've worked with program managers, senior program managers, people that are retired from the railroads for decades, and between working very close together with Lori Katzman on Path Extension and Bus Terminal for 5 years or so, with just every single day checking in with her and making sure I was learning her way and how she navigated different situations, especially since we were in an environment working at the client's office. So that was a lot of mentorship, even if it was informal. Yeah, I've just really tried to create situations where I touch base with people who know or who are involved in different things and let them know what I'm interested in and see how they can steer me and what their advice is.
I love it. I'm going to summarize that a little bit just because I love what you said at the end there, which is you kind of have to let people know what you want and help them steer and guide you, right? Because if you keep everything inside, you're never going to get there. And something we don't talk about that often on the show, but I'm a big fan of, is coaching. And I have a business coach, I have a people coach. My business coach also helps like with some personal coaching. And so like, I'm a huge proponent of it. I'm really glad you mentioned that. And I recommend it for anybody. And there are options even for self-coaching, right? Like sometimes coaching can be expensive depending on what avenues you're using to acquire it. But there are opportunities, like there are great books on it. You can just Google stuff on how to coach yourself in some ways. Sometimes it's just about challenging yourself and looking at things from a different perspective. And that was another point you made that I just wanted to touch on a little bit about like not limiting yourself in any one way. And I mentioned earlier, I'm currently reading Never Eat Alone, but the last book I read was Think Again by Adam Grant. And he talks a lot about not limiting yourself and how like asking kids when they're younger, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they're like, they'll say something and then, but that becomes their identity. Like they really think that's who they have to be for maybe the rest of their lives. And it's not always the case. It should be open-minded. So I thought those were some great points you made.
Yeah, thank you. And you're saying the self-help books too. I do try to dabble into some different type of, if I'm going to read, that is what I'm typically reading, is a leadership book or a book about harnessing your instincts.
Do you have a favorite book? What's your favorite like leadership book?
Oh, right now on my bedside table is Blink, which I'm rereading. So Malcolm Gladwell, just the instinctual, how you can influence your instincts and how you should listen to that is I think it's a great book.
I think it's on my list. If it's not, I'm going to add it. But I read Outliers, also by Malcolm Gladwell, and really interesting stuff there. Like, I don't know. It's crazy how much information exists out there and we just aren't aware of it until you start to read. And I'm like, oh, that's a real thing. Like, I had no idea about that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, cool. I do want to just ask a couple more questions. So diving back on to, we talked about like mentors that kind of impacted you. What is your advice or guidance for like the senior leadership in our industry today on how to empower and mentor and advocate like for the next generation? Because I think we're getting much better at it. But, you know, I know there were generational like gaps where it was always like the boss was the boss and you didn't talk to them and you just listened to them. And I think we're changing a little bit of that, which is good. But do you have any like advice for the current leadership in our industry on how to get the next generation really excited and part of this industry?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe a hot take, but don't be afraid to pass the torch, even if it's a slow handoff, but providing growth opportunities, experience, building trust and confidence in the next people in line. There, like you said, there seems to be a noticeable gap between the people that are in leadership roles right now versus the mid-career leaders. I don't know what happened to that group of people, but it seems like there's a decade worth of people that just either left the industry or they're not in line. I'm not sure why. I'm sure there's studies on what happened, but so all of the folks hitting the retirement age, their replacement could be 15 to 20 plus years younger than them. So working on that knowledge transfer, providing those incremental experiences to build trust and grow the next leaders, I think is important. As far as advice, man, I can imagine that managing mid-career leaders is probably pretty difficult because there's some that are, you got to feed the hungry ones, but you have to keep enough work for the rest of the crew. And so that's not a position that I truly envy, but I think that some people got into those positions for the right decisions that they made in the past and growing their team. They're probably not used to growing teams. So just more of the same, listening, hearing what people are telling you, what they want, and doing your best to create, nurture, and empower those transition times, learning experiences.
Don't be afraid to pass the torch. I love it. It's like an iconic line. I think it's so true. And I would say it's not even just about like senior leadership to current leadership. I think it's just the leadership in general. Like, I know sometimes I come across people like afraid to delegate or, you know, like, and I think part of that is also the fear of like, hey, if I pass the torch, like, what am I going to do? But I think for the people that are able to pass the torch, there's always room to grow because those people are then more effective because now you've got 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 people capable of doing what you were doing on your own and you can go elevate to the next. I really like that quote. I will probably use that at some point this week with my leadership team. I think that was great advice for people today, right? And you and I are still mid-career, right? So we've probably got a long runway here. What skills should we be developing? What skills should, you know, early career professionals and even late career professionals be developing to help lead this industry into the future? You know, there's all those metrics and graphs about how we're always so far behind everything. What are the skills we should be developing today for the future of the industry?
Yeah, I was not the highest. I did not graduate summa cum laude from Lehigh University. But what I was able to bring into my role was communication, early effective communication, and often I had an awareness of what types of communication worked in different ways with different people. I highly suggest learning about ways to communicate and understanding the ways that people above you and below you communicate, the way your client, your teammates communicate and what they expect. I'm going to try to say communicate at least 3 more times in this response. So I think that communicating is truly, it's a little bit of an art, a little bit of a science, but one of the major issues I see on projects, especially with remote work, is just you're not able to effectively say what you need and what you want. So pick up the phone, go to the office, stop in the trailer, talk to the people that you work with, and they'll see your face and you'll be a little bit more successful, I think. Also, follow up. If you're at an event, you already have gone through the effort of getting to an event, speaking with somebody, you've landed a business card, you're interested in the topic that they've shared, send a follow-up note. There were so many events that I've been at that I met somebody who was interesting and they didn't have a business card. I gave them mine. I wanted to get them involved in a Building Commerce or a PwC or a CMAA event, and I didn't have their name and their information. So reach out.
I love the answer about communicating, and to the point of, I forget the exact stat or percentage, but it's like only 7% of communication or 10% is your words. The other like 90% is body language, tone, like atmosphere, environment, whatever it is. So learning how to communicate and learning like the people you're working with is really, to be intuitive about them, right? It's really important. It's a great skill. I thought, you know, maybe something like technical, but I like that. I like the fact that communicating is important because I guess technical stuff is always changing and we're always learning, right? We're adapting constantly. All right, very cool. Well, I want to jump into our lightning round right now. And so our lightning round are fast fire questions and you answer them whatever comes top of mind. They're more for fun and just to get to know you. What do you think is the best superpower to have?
Flight.
Yeah, flight is a good one. I think flight too, to be honest. But I don't know. I always wonder like super strength or
yeah.
I think slowing down time. Like, Time is such a crazy. Yeah.
I feel like time travel, if I'm able to fly somewhere, I could save the 2.5 hours and the frustration and the stress of traffic, right?
I think there's a Superman episode where he actually flies so fast that he goes back in time. So I'll have to look that up, but it might be a 2-for-1 there with flight. All right, next one. What's a food that you will never eat?
Never eat? Oh, I don't know. I feel like there's some sort of like, it's called like stinky fruit or something. Although people say that tastes good, it just smells bad. I don't know.
I don't want to eat smell bad. I don't want to eat that.
Yeah, I think that's a hurdle for me. I eat anything, really.
That's cool. You're adventurous with food. That's great. Well, okay, so what's the wildest thing you've ever eaten?
I mean, I've had like critters, like crickets, gator. Oh man, I'm trying to harness some of the Pennsylvania weird things that I grew up eating, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now.
Critters is a good one.
Critters.
Last one in the lightning round. Do you have a movie that's made you laugh like really hard? Is there a movie you just always go back to and just makes you crack up?
Oh man. Let's say Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoy Dumb and Dumber. The silliness of it. And, yeah.
It's so funny and they're so clever and their range is amazing. Both Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, right? Because like, you know, it shocks people sometimes when you're like, wait, the guy from Dumb and Dumber is the guy in Newsroom? Like that's a real thing?
Yes. I was actually just going to say, if you've never watched Newsroom, it's one of my favorite shows on HBO.
It's a great show. I highly recommend it. So, yeah. All right. Well, Delia, thank you so much. That's all the time we have for today. Do you have any closing words before we sign off here?
I just want to say thank you for having me. Thank you for your team for putting this together. And thank you for what you're doing for the industry. This is truly wonderful. And I appreciate being here. And I hope that I'm able to inspire the future generation, build better futures.
I hope so, too. And there were so many iconic quotes in here. I really liked it. The tagline for Carlo, I think, is great. The don't be afraid to pass the torch is awesome. Thank you for being on. Thank you for the time. The insights were great. And thanks again to all the listeners. Keep an eye out for our next episode.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.